You're listening to the Mens Rea podcast, and this is the story of the mysterious death of Patrick Nugent. The 1980s in Ireland are generally remembered as a pretty dismal time in Irish history. The country was in the grips of a terrible recession caused not only by worldwide economic contraction, but also due to an overvalued currency and a number of poorly planned and foolish political decisions by governments in the preceding decade. Unemployment was at an all-time high and was accompanied by a period of mass emigration. There were only a few exceptions to this rule of widespread dreariness and despondency. One of these was a small pocket of communities at the mouth of the River Shannon in the west of Ireland in County Clare. There was an airport. Planes had been landing there to refuel from transatlantic flights since the 1930s, and what had started off as a flying boat terminal was developed into a permanent runway on the north side of the river. Nearly all the planes making their way to and from Europe from America stopped at Shannon Airport. In 1947, the world's first duty-free shop was begun there, and hosting the people who came through Shannon Airport injected the area with much-needed employment, funded primarily in the form of dollars. Bunratty Castle is no more than a 20-minute drive from Shannon Airport. And after falling into disrepair in the early 1800s, the 16th-century Norman stronghold was restored in 1956. A hotel was built nearby in 1959, and the castle and the so-called folk park were opened to the public to act as a sort of open-air museum, recreating what Irish village life was like in the 19th century. Today, you'll find everything from a little sweet shop to a one-roomed farmhouse to Bunratty House, built in 1804 to house the last members of the plantation family that had taken over the estate in 1720. In 1963, Bunratty Castle began to host its now famous medieval banquets, offering guests a taste of what life might have been like for the lords, earls, and indeed kings who had lived in the castle hundreds of years before. It was a popular spot for an evening of entertainment and, most certainly, a novel night out. The proximity of Bunratty to Shannon Airport meant that it was an obvious place for people to stay when visiting the west of Ireland, and in fact, in 1963, Pierre Salinger, who was press secretary to President John F. Kennedy, celebrated his birthday in the banquet hall of the castle while he was visiting to prepare for the president's visit to Ireland less than 2 weeks later. Mr. Salinger enjoyed his meal in medieval robes. On Friday, February 10th, 1984, there was a 40th wedding anniversary celebration being held for William Ryan and his wife Chrissy in the Great Hall at Bunratty. William Ryan was a well-known chef in the area, having worked as the executive chef for a number of years at the airport, and, in fact, overseeing the banquet mentioned before for Kennedy's press secretary. He had also been credited with inventing the Irish coffee. Chef Ryan met all the celebrities who came through the Shannon area, and there's even a picture of him serving a boozy coffee to Marilyn Monroe. He and his wife were known locally as lovely people, and were a part of their community. That night, there were over 60 guests in attendance, and lots of food and drink. Guests were greeted by Bunratty staff and a glass of good claret as they entered the hall. After a lavish meal, a three-piece band played and there was dancing. The party lasted well into the night. All of this was arranged and executed under the guidance of the banquet manager on duty in the castle that night. This was Patrick Nugent, a young local man from Six Mile Bridge. At the time, Patrick was 23. He came from a small family with just two younger brothers, John and Martin. Patrick really liked his work. He was good at it. He had first joined the banqueting staff at Bunratty Castle as a summer job, where he worked as a kitchen hand. For a time, he'd moved to the kitchens at Shannon Airport and had worked under Chef Ryan, but he preferred the work at the castle and returned there. By all accounts, Patrick loved his job and had worked his way up from casual work as a porter to part of the management team, eventually taking up the position of function manager, overseeing the feasts and parties held in the Great Hall. Patrick was driven and ambitious. In an episode of Scannel, produced by RTE in 2016, Patrick's brothers and colleagues recalled that there was something about the tall, slim young man which made him particularly suited to his job. He had an attention to detail not commonly found in 23-year-olds, and Patrick even looked the part of a hospitality professional. He was always well turned out and owned a number of suits, again, something not usual for young men in their early 20s. Patrick was also outgoing and well-liked. His colleagues respected him and recalled that he would get dug in with the job and pitch in with whatever needed doing to make sure that things ran smoothly in the castle. Patrick Nugent was well-liked as a manager there. According to an article published in 1986 in McGill magazine, earlier that Friday, Patrick had gone about ensuring that all of the food and drink was ready for the party that night and took care of making the hall look well. Part of the day was spent collecting plants and shrubs to decorate the castle. The Ryans called in to check on how things were progressing at the castle at around 3 p.m. and spoke to Patrick, who assured them that all was well. They spent the rest of the afternoon shopping in Shannon and headed back to Bunratty just after 7 to await the arrival of their guests. The Ryans' anniversary celebrations had been a great success. Everyone enjoyed their evening at Bunratty, and there was dancing and songs late into the night. The band played their last song at about 3 a.m, followed by the requisite rendition of the national anthem. And so by 3:30 on the 11th, people finally started to head home. Within a few minutes, there were only 12 people left in the banqueting space, which included William Ryan and his wife and 5 castle staff members. The rest were guests of the Ryans. Patrick decided to wave off William and Chrissy as they left, and so walked them out of the banqueting hall to say his goodbyes and to see them into their car. What happened next exactly remains a mystery. At about 4 a.m, a crash was heard by Bunratty staff members, as well as screams coming from outside the hall in the car park. Co-workers heard the disruption and went outside to see what the matter was. Patrick was lying on the ground just at the entranceway to the reception area in a very bad state. Witnesses who were working there that night described for the Scannel program how Patrick's eyes were rolling in his head and that they immediately knew that their manager was in a very bad state. 2 remaining guests at the party, off-duty members of the Gardaí, tried to revive Patrick. Garda Jim Cummins and Detective Garda Eugene Quinlan worked together and had attended the party with their wives. Eugene and his wife, Allison, had been neighbours of the Ryans and were their friends for nearly 20 years. Both of the men attempted resuscitation, and Jim Cummins went so far as to slap Patrick after he fell unconscious to try and revive him. But nothing worked. The 2 off-duty Garda had a local doctor called, as well as an ambulance, and one of Patrick's female colleagues held the young man's hand until it went limp. She told RTE interviewers that she'd thought to herself that her boss had passed away at that moment. Dr. Flynn and the ambulance arrived within 15 minutes of the call being placed, and Patrick was taken to Barrington's Hospital in Limerick, 15 kilometres or 10 miles away from the castle. But it was too late. Patrick had indeed died as he lay in the car park. He was pronounced dead at the hospital at 5:15 that morning, and his co-worker Mary identified him to the Gardaí formally. Then the Gardaí travelled out to the Nugent's home, to inform them of their son's death. They knocked on the door there at 7:45 on the 11th of February and gave the news to a devastated Joe and Nellie Nugent. The Nugent family was initially told that Patrick had died of a suspected heart attack. Through the shock, his family found this reason hard to believe, and it was more than that shock setting in that made them think that. Patrick was a young man, only 23, fit and healthy. They didn't recall a time he'd been to the doctor. It seemed so unlikely that he would drop dead of a heart attack. He'd just been at work, walking through a car park. He wasn't on a pitch or running a race. It didn't make sense. That day, a post-mortem was carried out in Barrington's. The examination revealed that Patrick had suffered a collapsed liver, internal bleeding, and lacerations to the lower lumbar spinal region. The pathologist confirmed that these were crush injuries, the kind that usually result from being run over by a car. Patrick had also sustained several broken ribs, which it was thought might not be part of those injuries, likely caused by the weight of a car. There was no explanation from the investigating team as to what precisely had happened to Patrick, how he had come to be run over in the car park at his job, or who was responsible for his death. News of the tragic and strange death of a young man in Bunratty was broadcast, and people all over the country became interested in the mysterious death of Patrick Nugent. Less than a week after the first reports appeared, one of the young workers at Bunratty Castle, Declan O'Neill, approached a Limerick correspondent for RTE. He had some startling information. The 18-year-old from Quinn, County Clare, told the reporter that he'd heard the screams the night that Patrick died. He'd run out of the kitchen to see what was going on and found Patrick lying on the ground just inside the door of the hall. As he crouched down to try and figure out what had happened to his boss, Declan heard Patrick say the phrase, quote, "He clocked me." Patrick had repeated this 3 times before he died. Rumours began to circulate in the area in the absence of any real explanation of the circumstances surrounding Patrick's death. The stories flying about the town focused mainly on the guests who had still been present at the castle that night. 2 of them were members of the Garda Síochána, off duty at the time of the party, and friends of the Ryans. These were, of course, Garda James Cummins and Detective Garda Eugene Quinlan. Official information about what had happened was lacking, both publicly and privately. The Nugent family were frustrated that information about what had happened to Patrick wasn't being provided by the Gardaí to them. This lack of communication also made them suspicious. The police weren't being forthcoming. Joe Nugent thought that perhaps what was going on was that Gardaí were investigating members of their own force, and that this might explain why no one could tell them what had happened to Patrick. He decided to start asking hard questions, like, how did Patrick's back get broken by being run over by a car, yet he had sustained no injuries to his legs? Surely this would imply that by the time that injury to his lower spine were made, Patrick was already lying on the ground. How had Patrick made it from the car park to just inside the door of the hall if he had been run over outside? The family wanted answers, and so did the community. On the 20th of March 1984, 600 people from across 5 parishes met publicly in 6 Mile Bridge to show their support of the Nugent family in the face of whatever was going on in the investigation into their son's death. Something wasn't right, and they all knew it. They wanted justice done, they wanted answers, and in a larger sense, they wanted to try and preserve community relations with the Gardaí. People needed to know if they could trust the police to do their jobs. An assistant commissioner of the Gardaí was appointed to head up the investigation into what had occurred that night. Though this was simply procedure at the time, because 2 Gardaí were, at that point, witnesses in a serious case involving the death of an individual. It was hoped that the appointment would allay some of the concerns people in Shannon had about what was going on, but this was far from a direct response to these concerns. On the 21st of March, Patrick Nugent's death was covered by the primetime current events programme on RTE, Today Tonight. Joe Nugent, along with his surviving sons, John and Martin, gave interviews relating to the concerns that they had with the ongoing investigation. Joe said that Gardaí had not told him of the actual cause of his son's death until 3 days after the event, and then John and Martin discussed having been told that a person had admitted that he'd hit Patrick with a car. The person who had made this startling admission was William Ryan. He had first spoken to the Gardaí a week after Patrick's death had occurred and made two further statements. In his third statement, he was presented with evidence that his car had made contact with Patrick Nugent's body, and in response, he said he didn't recall having hit the young man, but if there was evidence, he said he must have done. This was the admission. To the surprise of Patrick's family and the wider community, shortly after the Today Tonight broadcast, the chef was charged with the manslaughter of Patrick Nugent. And so on the 14th of May 1985, William Ryan faced trial in the Ennis Circuit Court. In addition to the manslaughter charge, he was also charged with dangerous driving and failing to remain at the scene of an accident. The state's case was that William Ryan had driven his car into another, one owned by one of the Gardaí there that night, and that after that, Patrick Nugent was crushed against a wall. This had been a tragic accident, they said, caused by drink driving, but it was manslaughter nonetheless. Ryan had left the scene by the time Gardaí arrived, which complicated matters. Senior counsel for the prosecution admitted that the case was further complicated by the fact that the two Gardaí present had tried to cover up what had happened in the immediate aftermath of the accident, not realizing how seriously Patrick Nugent had been injured. The focus throughout the trial was trying to establish the role of the two off-duty Gardaí who were present that night. What exactly had they done? Where exactly were they? Where had Garda Cummins been when the responding Gardaí arrived on the scene that night? Cummins, Quinlan, their wives and other guests and employees who had stayed late at the castle that night all had different recollections of where they had been when Patrick had been injured, and what they were doing, and the sequence of events. There was also a question as to why it was that the two off-duty Garda had been less than forthcoming with their colleagues who had responded to the castle that night. Neither men had been forthright in telling investigators what they'd done or seen. Both Gardaí were closely examined during the trial. Garda Jim Cummins told the court that he had moved his car from the general public car park to a yard inside the park. He said he'd done that to hide the fact that he had two kegs of beer in the car from the responding Gardaí. But the obvious question was then asked. Had he, in fact, moved his car because it had been involved somehow in what had happened to Patrick Nugent that night? Then Cummins said he'd moved the car because it was uninsured at the time, and that this had happened shortly after the accident that Patrick was involved in. Cummins agreed that he had initially told Gardaí he'd moved his car to make way for the ambulance after Patrick had been found injured, but that wasn't true. Mr. Justice Timothy Desmond, the trial judge, was not happy with these conflicting statements. Cummins said he didn't recall having made a statement to a fellow Garda responding on the night, quote, "You're coming for me, lads," end quote, and also vigorously denied having helped to move Patrick Nugent's body from the car park to just inside the doorway to the reception area of Bunratty. Eugene Quinlan confirmed that immediately after the incident he had declined to make a formal statement to the Gardaí and had contacted his own solicitor and engaged senior counsel Patrick McEntee before turning up at the Garda station 2 weeks later for his version of events to be taken down. An allegation made by Chrissy Ryan was put to Quinlan that he, Cummins, and a man named Gerard O'Connor, another guest, had all carried Patrick Nugent across the courtyard and placed him where he had been found in the doorway. Quinlan, of course, denied this. A lot of the testimony related to yet another man who was present that night, Gerard O'Connor. He'd been at the party with the guards. Dermot Kinlan, senior counsel for Mr. Ryan, suggested that Mr. O'Connor had gotten into a fight with Detective Garda Quinlan, and what had happened was that Patrick had tried to intervene in the fight, and he'd been injured in that way. But when this was put to Eugene Quinlan on the stand, he said he hadn't had a row with O'Connor that night, or ever. Another Garda also had a version of events to present to the court, and that was Garda John Talty, who had responded to the scene after the ambulance had left with the body of Patrick Nugent. Initially, no one on the scene wanted to talk to him. He said to Cummins and Quinlan, quote, "Come on, lads, what the fuck happened here? Do you think we're idiots?" End quote. He recalled that Cummins had put his wrists together as if to be handcuffed and said to him, "You're coming for me, lads." He also recalled that Quinlan had said to him, quote, "Do the best you can, for Jim's sake," end quote. He told the court he had not asked what was meant by either of those statements. Then Gerard O'Connor himself took the stand. He had flown in specifically to attend the trial, as he had since moved to the United States. O'Connor insisted that there had been no argument that night, but did say that he and Quinlan had had a disagreement about the membership of a golf club some years previously. That was all. William Ryan's version of events was read to the court from the statements he had made to Gardaí. He told them that the night of the party, there had been a physical fight between two guests, Mr. Quinlan and Mr. O'Connor. Ryan said that he saw the altercation from where he was seated in his car as he was about to leave Bunratty. He explained that he had gotten upset at what was going on and was not fully in control of the car while behind the wheel. And so, as he watched the fight, his car lurched forward. It then hit Garda Cummins' car, which then hit the wall. Ryan described Cummins' car as coming out of nowhere, and on the night, he thought that Cummins' car had actually been in motion when his car struck it. It was Cummins' car, he said, that had hit Patrick Nugent in the end. This had all been a terrible accident. His two friends, the guards, then told Ryan that everything was okay and that he should leave, and so he and his wife drove off. As reported by McGill, the jury also heard evidence regarding the post-mortem carried out on Patrick Nugent's body and the injuries that he had suffered. Dr. Bennett had carried out the post-mortem, and the injuries discovered during that examination were described, as well as Dr. Bennett's finding that Patrick Nugent had been hit by a car, but that he had not been standing when the impact occurred, given that there was no damage to his legs. A forensic scientist employed by the Department of Justice, Dr. Sheila Willis, also described her findings for the court. She said that Patrick's clothing showed less damage than was usually expected in pedestrians involved in car accidents. There was a smear of paint identified as having come from the Ryan's car on Patrick's jacket sleeve, and there were friction marks and paint consistent with the car of Garda Jim Cummins on the front of the jacket. Dr. Willis's opinion of what had happened was that Patrick had been struck by Ryan's car and that he had been crushed against a wall by Cummins' car while he was on or near the ground. In his closing statement, Mr. Kinlan described the events of the early morning of the 11th of February as, quote, "strange, mysterious, and odd," end quote, and insisted that there had been no cover-up for the benefit of his client, Chef Ryan. When both the prosecution and defense had completed their cases, Mr. Justice Desmond, on the basis that there was no evidence to support the charge, directed the jury to make a finding of not guilty on the charge of manslaughter against Mr. Ryan. They were sent away to deliberate on the other two charges remaining against him. Ryan was found not guilty of dangerous driving and leaving the scene of an accident after a short deliberation. There had been no clear evidence presented, really no evidence at all. One of the men on the jury made the unusual move of approaching Joe Nugent after the trial had completed, to pass on his condolences and also to express that he hoped that there would be a further investigation into what had occurred. He was sure that the investigation had not gotten to the bottom of what had happened, and he wished the Nugent family well in what would turn into a long quest for justice. There had been no answers for the Nugent family in the trial. Once the criminal proceedings were completed, an inquest began in October of 1985. After hearing witness testimony as well as medical evidence, the 8-man jury found that Patrick Nugent had died after being hit by a person or persons unknown, causing him to fall, and afterwards was then run over by a car, accidentally. That wasn't the end of it, though. The jury had attached a rider to the verdict. Again, based on what they had heard during the inquest proceedings, they had also concluded that the Minister for Justice should reopen investigations into what had happened. They said there had been suppression of evidence in the case. And so in 1986, an internal Garda inquiry was launched, but it resulted in very little. Detective Garda Quinlan faced 7 disciplinary charges and was cleared of all of them. Garda Cummins was dismissed on foot of the findings, but he brought what amounted to an unfair dismissal case to the High Court against the Garda Síochána. In December of 1989, after a second internal Garda inquiry was completed, Garda Cummins was reinstated to the force and issued with a fine instead. There has been no further progress in ascertaining exactly how it was that Patrick Nugent died that night. His family have continued to call for inquiries into the events of that night, with the campaign headed by Joe Nugent for 15 years until his death. It's since been taken over by Patrick's younger brothers, John and Martin. In 2016, an independent review group was set up by the then Minister for Justice, Francis Fitzgerald. It was set up to look into cases where there was alleged Garda misconduct, and 320 such cases were selected to be further assessed. Patrick Nugent's case was one of those. The Nugent family welcomed the move, saying that their main priority at that point was to establish the actual events of the night, which was just as well because any information or documents given to the review board could not be used in further criminal proceedings once the case review was complete. The initial review by the independent review mechanism resulted in a recommendation that there be a full inquiry into the matter. However, the Nugent family expressed their concerns that the terms of reference for that inquiry focused on Garda procedure and actions taken during the initial investigation rather than trying to establish the actual events leading to Patrick's death. In June of 2017, the Irish Times reported that the Taoiseach, or Deputy Prime Minister, had instructed the retired judge who was to head up the inquiry to submit a report of his findings into the investigation and subsequent disciplinary hearings that resulted from Mr. Nugent's death. According to the Clare Champion in an article by Owen Leahy, published in July of this year, that report has yet to be published. The family have since become involved with the advocacy group Justice for All, and have said that they have not ruled out the possibility of bringing Patrick's case to the European Court of Human Rights or even to the United Nations Human Rights Committee once all legal avenues within the state are exhausted. John and Martin Nugent are determined to find out what really happened to their brother. Thank you for listening to Mens Rea, a true crime podcast. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at mensreapod, or you can send an email to mensreapod@gmail.com. This podcast is made possible in part from generous donations by supporters on Patreon. Please do check it out at patreon.com/mensreapod. Our theme music is Quinn's Song, The Dance Begins by Kevin MacLeod. Additional music is by Juanita Meisel and Kevin MacLeod. This episode was researched and written by me, your host, Sinead. All sources for today's episode can be found in the show notes or on our website, www.mensreapod.com. And so, till next time, don't do anything I wouldn't do.